Hello, my name is Chip Lang, and you are listening to Total EM. For today's podcast, we're going to talk all about the use of ultrasound for the diagnosis of appendicitis. But before we go into that, if you somehow missed it, Critical Access 2019 just occurred, and it was phenomenal. We had a great time. There were great faculty, students, models, and supporting staff. Really appreciated the help of our vendor as well as our caterers, and as well as support there with GE and Butterfly. I'm looking forward to more future courses. We're going to have one hopefully in 2020 in Missouri, I think around September, that we're going to do the same kind of course again, maybe a little bit different, tweaking a few things to make it just that much better. But don't worry, because in between, over the next year, there are going to be courses all over the place and of different types. We do conferences where we do workshops built in with them. We also do other types of courses, such as online and in person, really expanding out into the EMS sector, as well as to different educational programs such as PA programs, residencies, so on and so forth. But if you are also needing specialized training, say for a specific place, we do that too. We do customized training or one of the format courses. But check everything out at practicalpocus.com. And if for some reason you're not sure how to spell POCUS, that's P-O-C-U-S. So practical, P-O-C-U-S, all one word, .com, practicalpocus.com. Okay, you didn't want to come here to listen to that advertisement, but I want to get that out of the way because it is a great program and it is something to check out if you're at all interested in learning how to perform ultrasound at the bedside, which is exactly what we're talking about right now, which is why we're tying this all in together. So we all know what appendicitis is, at least I hope you do, and we all understand the role of ultrasound there. But what makes this different is that more and more in emergency medicine, we're using point-of-care ultrasound to help us with the diagnosis of acute appendicitis. And you may ask yourself, well, what's the accuracy of that? What's the sensitivity, the specificity, the likelihood ratios, all those types of things? Well, we'll get into that. But just like any time we're talking about ultrasound, it's hard to do that on an audio-only podcast. But hopefully, you all will go over to the website, totalem.org, under Emergency Professionals. You'll find podcast 161, which if you're listening to this shortly after it's published, you'll be able to find it right at the top of the page. If not, that's okay. You may have to do a little bit of digging. You can easily do that under the search engine. But at any rate, let's dive into what this is actually going to be about. So, the use of point-of-care ultrasound for appendicitis, it's really not that hard. There are some major benefits for why we should do this. One is that this helps with the diagnostic momentum. If I can diagnose this at the point of care, especially if I'm working in the rural or remote settings that I tend to work in, if I can find this right away, I know that for the most part, especially in our really young patients, that person's not going to stay there. So I can get them to the most appropriate care as quickly as possible. I don't have to wait for labs or other types of imaging. I can just start getting things moving in the right direction. But let's say I can take care of it locally. Well, this avoids delays in imaging. This allows me to get on the phone with the surgeon just that much more quickly. This allows us to all work together to provide better care. Also, it helps avoid the radiation that we expose our patients to with CT, and also sometimes delays. Now, this is obviously going to be a little bit situation dependent, but most commonly you're going to use IV contrast, and some places still do oral contrast. Whether or not that's truly beneficial is its own separate debate, but most likely it is not. Plus, let's say you have someone pregnant or young and you're wanting to avoid CT, but you can't do this with ultrasound, that leaves you with MRI. A lot of times the same places that will want to use MRI are the same ones who also won't have the ultrasound capability for whatever reason. So that really doesn't help us out in those situations. But also MRI takes a lot of time. It's expensive. There's a lot of contraindications to it. So basically between CT and MRI, this is going to be a delay. Now you could say, well, we could wait for the radiology performed or consultative ultrasound. That is true. You could do that. But again, this leads to unnecessary delays, and there's a high probability that the ultrasound tech who does come in may not be able to find it. Actually, during the course, I learned, at least with one of our instructors, that when her local department does ultrasound performed by radiology techs, They have to spend so much time with it. Usually it sounds like 20 to 25 minutes, if I remember correctly. And that's quite a bit of time to be looking around. But this allows us to overcome the issues and obstacles of bowel gas and stuff like that. Now, you're going to ask, does that mean we should spend that time? Of course not. That's a lot of time to be spending that we could be doing other things. But a quick peek of a couple of minutes can really change the diagnostic momentum. So the easiest way to perform this actual exam is quite simple. What you do is if that patient's young enough, skinny enough, what you can do is a linear probe. The linear probe is going to buy you some additional detail. Also, the focal point, usually what we're looking for, is only a few centimeters under the surface of the skin. So we don't need something that penetrates really deeply. Now, obviously, bigger people, for example, we will want the curvilinear probe as the optional probe that we'll want to use. But keeping in mind that we're going to lose some of the quality there, plus, it can be rather burdensome and cumbersome. The phased array probe is another option, but really, if I had to choose, I either want the linear probe as first choice or the curvilinear probe if I need to use it on those patients. And then what you do, if you can, is to have the patient put the probe where it hurts the most. Sometimes they can do it, sometimes they may not be able to, but you can scan that rough area. What I'm usually looking for is the psoas muscle and the external iliac artery, and usually the appendix is hanging out right around there. Sometimes it's going to be flopped around different directions, sometimes it's always hard to see that, but what I'm going to look for is something that looks like a tubular structure, but has an end that I can clearly visualize, and that's going to help me with the appendix itself. And what I want to do is try and get that longitudinal view to start with, because I want to be able to follow the whole length of it, because this can help answer a couple of different questions. So some of the diagnostic cutoffs, now given that these will vary a little bit, if they have a thickened anterior wall of greater than 2 millimeters, that's concerning, or an overall size that is increased. So the traditional cutoff is greater than 6 millimeters. We're going to talk about why greater than 7 millimeters is usually a better cutoff, and that it's non-compressible, also usually has a target sign appearance. So there's basically like this double lumen appearance. And if you were to throw some color on there, especially on the short axis view, just like you would get your target sign usually on the short axis view, you'll see this ring of fire appearance, which is basically on color, lots of reds and blues as there's increased vascularity to the area. And we're going to include in the show notes, so again, make sure to check out the show notes on the website, totalem.org. You will be able to see a visual representation of all of this. So now that we know what we're looking for and we know how to perform the basics of the exam, like I said, this should not take long. This is a couple of minutes. This is usually while I'm talking to the patient and family and after I've gathered that, hey, I'm worried about appendicitis. Now, if someone comes in screaming, I have right lower quadrant pain and it was periumbilical and I have 2 days of fever with this, I'm probably going to go straight in with the ultrasound. But sometimes it's not as clear cut as this. It's just this kid with vague abdominal pain, and when you push around, there's some McBurney's point tenderness, and maybe there's a little bit of a psoas or an obturator sign or something like that. Okay, I'll go back and get the ultrasound at that point, if I hadn't already brought it in. But you can still do this within a couple of minutes, still talk to the family, talk to the patient, explain what happens next from here, especially if you see something or don't, and you just kind of walk through everything. Now, if you're still learning this early on, so you know, if what I'm coaching you here is the first you really know of this, check out some other videos and don't forget that early on, you still need to get the supporting imaging. So what I mean by that is a lot of times we really should get the additional confirmation while we're in our learning phase. Once we're past our learning phase and we've developed competency in doing this exam, that changes. But when you're still initially doing this, it's good to have some other form of confirmatory testing first. Okay, so what about the evidence? What is there to show that we can do this just like radiology can? Well, that evidence is actually growing quite a bit, but my favorite one that's most recent, and hopefully very soon you'll hear this on the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine with Ken Milne, is a paper that we're going to cover. It's a systematic review of meta-analysis by Lee and Yoon, in the American Journal of Emergency Medicine 2019, titled Diagnostic Performance of Emergency Physician-Performed Point-of-Care Ultrasonography for Acute Appendicitis, a Meta-Analysis. And what they investigated is the exact thing that we want to know is how does emergency medicine do versus radiology? And hey, what are some cutoffs and stuff like that? Well, the biggest one is that they found that the outer diameter cutoff is better at 7 millimeters versus 6 millimeters. And I believe that's an important point to consider. Now, does that mean that if I have someone with the right story and right physical exam findings and it's only 6 millimeters, we haven't got up to that 7 millimeter or more cutoff yet, that I am not going to call this appendicitis? I probably still am, and I'm probably going to do some more investigation, but at least I'm going to keep in mind that that 7 millimeter or more cutoff is better than the 6 millimeter. So I'm not going to go into all the details because it's in the show notes. And like I said, I'm hopefully going to cover this soon with Ken Milne. But basically, this meta-analysis was of 17 studies involving almost 2,400 patients in the diagnosis of acute appendicitis. And what they found was that there's a pooled sensitivity, because again, we have different studies, of 84%, with a 95% confidence interval ranging from 72 to 92%, and a pooled specificity of 91% with 95% confidence intervals of 85 to 95%. What's a little more impressive, what helps explain this a little bit better, is the positive likelihood ratio being of 7 and a negative likelihood ratio of 0.22. So basically, if you see it, it really is appendicitis, and if you don't, it's kind of hard to really call for certain, but it's at least reassuring. So the diagnostic cutoffs were actually better with pediatric acute appendicitis, with a sensitivity and specificity both of 95%. Now, when it comes to comparison of our radiology colleagues, what we found is that in emergency medicine, the sensitivity was 81% and a specificity of 89%, versus with radiology, it was a sensitivity of 74% and a specificity of 97%. Still really good. Now, a couple of quick key points, and we won't go into a whole lot of detail because, like I said, it's going to be in the show notes, but more importantly, in the near future, it's going to be on the SGIM, is that these studies did have a wide variety of cutoffs. So they didn't all use the same. That's how we found the 6 versus 7 millimeter difference in cutoff and why that may play a role as far as parameters go. But also the other supporting stuff. Did they have a target sign? Or did they have increased vascularity, that ring of fire appearance? You know, what exactly all it included varied from study to study, which is important to at least keep in mind. But I found this a little more pragmatic because it at least shows that overall, these different criteria still play a role, but maybe there are ones that are going to be better, which are going to overall increase our sensitivity and specificity. There's also significant heterogeneity in the study, meaning that there are a lot of differences in the groups, just like we're talking about. But like I said, I don't find this as a necessary negative. I think it's just an idea for more future evaluation as far as what criteria, what cutoffs are going to be best. Also, all of these studies were positive results, so we didn't have a negative study in the mix, which, I mean, realistically in medicine and with research, we usually see that positive studies are really the only ones that are traditionally added. But negative studies would have been helpful because if we had seen that maybe there are some roles where radiology was going to be better at it, it's good to know that. But at least for this purpose, I think it's something to just keep in mind that, you know, positive studies are traditionally biased in this role. Also, when it comes to the point-of-care ultrasound side of things, this was done in academic settings, mostly with residents and attending physicians. It really doesn't speak to the differences in other types of clinicians as well as those in different settings outside of academia, which I really think wouldn't be a huge difference based on some other data from some other types of diagnostic imaging with POCUS, but I think it's something to at least keep in the back of our mind that, again, this could play a potential role, but we still could use some further evaluation specifically to know if that actually does have any bearing of significance. Finally, it's worth knowing that with pediatric patients, it makes sense why we are able to see this much better in pediatric patients. The biggest one is body habitus. Sometimes compliance with exam can make it more difficult with pediatric patients, but I also find difficulty in compliance with adults to do certain exams. But I think with what we're seeing on this is that overall pediatric patients are going to be the easier ones to do it in, which are also the same ones we're going to tend to avoid the CT in anyway. So this is not a bad study at all. I really like the way the study was done. I think it bears some more information. Again, that 7 millimeter cutoff is one I'm going to consider even stronger in the future versus using the traditional 6 millimeter cutoff. But overall, I believe that in emergency medicine, we can do this well and we can do it accurately. And as the overall results show, it is that we do a pretty good job with this. And I think a big reason why is because we get the immediate feedback versus when a radiologist is reading something that an ultrasound tech has done, there's not that direct connection. So it makes it a little more challenging to be able to fully grasp the imaging of what's being seen and what's being diagnosed. So if you're interested in more, feel free to check out practicalpocus.com. Also, make sure to go to our show notes at totallyem.org to see some more information and to get some better understanding of what all we're talking about. But until next time, continue to provide total care everywhere.